Dirt and Sprague.
Since that point, here's Lassiter. Belda. Belda, chance to serve in, will do so. Looking back post, Bye is there. Headed in by Kelsey. The Timbers have the lead at the death.
Andy Dirt Johnson, Brandon Sprague.
He's on the inbounds, here's Oppie. He's got three, he's got two. Up the floor, he's going to set up Matisse with one. There you go. Matisse beats the clock because Denny was in a hurry.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
All right, 6:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Hello. Good morning. Happy Monday, everybody. Hello.
What is happening?
How we doing? How we feeling?
Doing delightful. Doing fantastic.
Yeah.
Wonderful Masters weekend. Yeah. Solo watching yesterday. I got no complaints in life whatsoever.
That's good to hear. Back on the ones and twos is the very delightful Pro Timbers.
Hello.
Jason.
Yeah. Hey, they got a big win this weekend.
They got a huge win this weekend. Even, Thank you to VAR for helping them out.
Soccer Dirt was paying attention to that one. They haven't won a game since their first game of the year.
No, that was their second win.
Look at
win
our
of
Timbers. Let's go, baby. Red
one of the best teams in soccer we beat.
Hey, look, at over the last 72 hours, we have one of the best records in the MLS.
You do.
That's all I know.
Blazers Timbers, we're on fire.
Uh-oh,
on
here we come.
Fire.
Championship runs loading.
The Fire going to add some players to the roster later today.
They are. That's right.
Yeah. It's been a scary 72, 96 hours. Wednesday afternoon, I got word my sister and dad were in a serious car accident down vacationing in New Mexico. Spent the next 12 hours trying to figure out where they all were sent. And so fortunately, everybody is alive and okay. My sister, just a minor, well, not a minor injury, but didn't require surgery. Mm-hmm. However, my dad is down in El Paso. There's a trauma unit at the hospital down there in El Paso, taking great care of him. But he's suffered multiple internal injuries and fractures. He's already had one procedure and two surgeries. He's going to need another one. So my brother is down there. It's gotten to him, so I've seen pictures, and he's breathing on his own and starting to recover. It will be a long, long, long process. I'll be going down next week. Obviously, I'm changing my vacation and going down there. So I will be going down off and on over the next month or two, and the big issue will be figuring out when he is stable enough so we can try to transport him back here home and continue the rehab process. So very, very, very scary. But yeah, so thank you guys. Thanks to Schultze and Casey and everybody else that covered so I could take care of my family. But wanted to get back. One, looks like he's still himself.
That's good.
No head injuries, nothing there, and his heart's good, his head's good, so we're just trying to fix the parts that got broken and get him back to health, but so.
Well, I'm glad it wasn't worst case scenario, and I'm glad that you're back today.
Yes.
Yes.
It's terrible having to get a phone call in the afternoon from Brandman like, hey, man, this just happened. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I thought I was getting fired. When Dusty calls me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon,
that
I'm
assumes
like,
we're getting fired.
Why is Dusty? The last time I got a call from Dusty was for the piss dipper fiasco at 2 o'clock. So I answered the phone and said, did somebody clog the urinal?
Why did he call you?
I said, did somebody clog the urinal
That's
again?
Weird.
That wasn't me this time. I promise you. Who could have done that? It wasn't me. So that wasn't a great call to get. And I can't imagine it was fun for you either. So we're glad that everything seems to be slowly heading in the right direction based on how scary it seemed initially.
We are recovering. So, all the doctors and nurses I've talked to on the phone are like, no, considering what occurred and still, you know, I haven't gotten all the details. Part of me doesn't want to get all the details as to what actually occurred in the accident. I don't want that mental image in my head. So, he's Stubborn old Papa Swag is that stubbornness is paying off. So,
well, the weird thing was we get the phone call, and I think we both got separate phone calls. And I text him. I go, "Dusty, call you?" And he's like, "Yeah." And Dusty told both of us not to reach out to you, to let you reach out to us, which felt very odd.
Yeah, we wanted to send an immediate, like, "Hey, we hope you're doing all right."
Like 24 hours.
We know something's going on. Yeah. We don't know all the details. We just are thinking about you.
You know that we know because you got to be told, like, "Oh, you're not going to be here. There'll right. be Casey in tomorrow." And we're like, so we're just not supposed to contact this person at all during this? It's a very weird situation presented to us of, like, I want to say something, but we didn't. So
no,
it was like,
I
they don't care.
I just, it was the details initially were very sketchy, and I was just on the phone constantly trying
to figure it out. Yeah.
Figure out where he was and what happened and what state he's in.
It helps if it's here, it's locally, and you can go to the hospital and go see him. And okay, so, he's life flighted to this hospital. I'll go visit him.
But no, being four states away,
not easy to do.
You ever been to El Paso?
Yeah, that's where I had to fly into when he had his heart attack and go get him.
No
the last
more
time.
New Mexico. Just that's Texas, El Paso. That area is off limits for the Swigard family.
We are done with New Mexico.
No traveling down there whatsoever for anybody.
Your dad is a scientist. He loves science. He loves nature. Like, all due respect, why do you keep going back to New Mexico?
You're tempting the gods
of
here,
all
man.
The places to keep going.
Well, in the wintertime, it gets cold, but it's dry and sunny.
Yeah.
So you get to see sunlight every day.
So does Los Angeles.
You know? So does Palm Springs. How about we try that one out,
Palm
right?
Springs, there you go. Right.
Let's go to Tucson.
The worst case scenario is like, he goes to Palm Springs, something bad happens, you got to fly down, well, I'll take care of your dad, and I'm going to go golf.
And, you know, I got my clubs with me, and I'll watch you, and hey, you know, he's just in the hospital, there's nothing we can do.
Is that a golf bag with you, Jason?
Might as well get 18 while I'm down here.
Those are my clothes.
Might as well utilize my time
efficiently. Those are long pants.
Yeah, come on, man, you never know what you need.
So, yeah. Things are, improving hour by hour, and you're going to get some Schultze, some Brandon, some Casey here.
You get a hodgepodge behind the board.
Off and on during the next month or so.
We'll careful. Put the bullpen to good use.
Schultze might be showing up in a thong at this point with Mariners being red hot.
Nice little weekend. He's probably feeling pretty good.
I know.
They go for the sweep this afternoon. It's a four-gamer.
That's right. I forgot it's a wraparound four-gamer.
The businessman's
four-gamer?
Special today.
Yeah, they got a Monday game.
Today.
3-1, 4-0, whatever. At least you won.
So I don't know if the Instagram or the Twitter post of him in the thong with a turkey sandwich today is forthcoming. I don't.
Him on a couch in a marathon eating a turkey sandwich is an image that nobody needs.
No.
I think it would do pretty good numbers on our social media accounts, though. I'm not going to lie.
Could you imagine just posting?
A lot of likes, a lot of posts.
No description, just a photo just of Schultze in an actual marathon eating a turkey sandwich
first
on a
pitch.
Couch.
First pitch.
Nothing else on.
Exactly.
Excited for game four of the series
today. That's all it is.
Hey, he preached, don't panic, and he was right. They won three in a row, so look at Schultze being right out of the weekend.
Well, it's good to have you back, dude. I'm sorry the circumstances drove you away.
Thanks, everybody, for all the kind words, and I know he's got a radio station and a whole fraternity thinking about him and sending him good thoughts.
For sure.
It's going to be a long recovery, but it is going to be a recovery.
Yes, no doubt about it.
That's the most important thing.
Well, we got a lot to get to today.
We do.
It's a busy little weekend we had in sports.
It was. Nice little tasty weekend.
Now, let me just get out on the front end of this, because we have a lot to talk about.
Sure.
I didn't watch a single second of that King game.
I did not either.
You are not getting me.
No takes on that game for
me. Oh, they blew the lead, though, Sprague. You missed it. Did they win?
I mean, it didn't matter. We were going to lose.
Did they win?
They were up 20 at halftime.
The Kings played literally. I mean, they already are the worst team in the NBA, and they didn't play anybody.
No, I did have it on because I was, you know, trying to get back caught up ready for today. So it was just on.
That's great.
As I was doing
stuff.
I'm happy
for you.
I have no takes on
I'm happy for everybody that celebrated us securing the eighth seed because we beat one of the worst teams in basketball.
We did it, guys. We did it.
I did have a listener reach out and say, maybe you need to play a new game, Kings or Jazz. Like, you know, we did the
Netter
Pacer.
Name those players. I couldn't name anybody from the game last night because I didn't watch.
we could probably name more Jazz than Kings.
I know DeRozan didn't play. That's one of the few Kings that I can actually name.
Only time I saw DeRozan was at the Nike Hoop Summit with Westbrook.
Oh, was he there on Saturday night?
Yeah.
Is Westbrook a King?
Yeah.
He is?
Yeah.
How about that?
They signed Schroeder to an actually decent-sized deal, and then about a month later, Westbrook was not getting picked up. They signed Westbrook, too.
I mean, why not? You might as well get them both.
What are you doing?
They're building for the future, okay?
Yeah.
The future is now.
Schroeder is a Cav. Westbrook's not.
Exactly.
The Kings are the Kings. So
play that game. Where's Schroeder right now?
Dougie McBuckets is still on the Kings.
I didn't know that either.
He's still in the NBA? Yep. How about that? He's still kicking?
See, that is a fun game when you think of it. You're like, who is this guy? Oh, that guy's on
He's
the team.
He's still there, man.
You learn a lot from random terrible NBA teams.
Like the beam from 5 years ago to now. Boy, oh boy, the times got hard.
It's the first time I saw this from Josh Dubow. He works for the AP, just gives out good football and basketball stats. It's the first time in NBA history with eight teams with 55-plus losses.
It was a
quite
race
literally
to
the worst
bottom.
Year of NBA basketball
Thankfully,
ever performed.
It is now officially over. There will be no more tanking, although I might advocate for tanking on Tuesday and Wednesday. I don't think I'm going to get it, but I would prefer that to be the outcome of the Blazers season. I digress, but at least all those bottom feeder teams are now officially done playing basketball. So we've taken a step in the right direction. That is no longer the dialogue.
Yeah.
Their seasons are over.
Yeah.
Thank you for your craptitude.
So we'll dive into the Blazers today. They have wrapped up the eighth seed. They've got the mighty 7-8 battle.
Pivotal game tomorrow
Tuesday
night.
Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, Prime Video.
Bring it on.
I have
oh, it's a Prime Video game.
Prime
huh?
Video has the entire play-in tournament.
Yeah, the right. local broadcasters don't get to call these games.
What's with that?
People are pissed.
Rightfully so.
Like, last night was the last Blazer broadcast you're going to get for the year.
I mean, if I would have known that, I might have actually watched the game.
Same.
I just assumed that they were going to be calling, because they've always called first-round games. There's always been the combo. It's on national TV.
How do you make that money, Andrew?
And the local. I mean,
you get Prime to spend a little more money by giving them all the first round stuff.
Yeah.
Playing stuff.
I guess.
Here's the good news.
Okay. What do you got?
Eric Collins is going to be on the show this week.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
They're in the playoffs, too.
He specifically. So I emailed him yesterday before the Blazer game had ended because I knew they would beat the Kings.
Yes.
And he told me to reach back out because he might get the Blazer game for the play-in. And so I just kind of teed it up of being like open-ended, depending on what he has. He says, I'm doing the Friday game out west.
Okay.
Okay, so the Blazers win. They're not in that.
No.
Right? But he'd still be willing to come on Thursday. And then he asked if we could steer the conversation to Wayland Boot or Ed Wayland.
Okay.
Said he's a Portland native and I grew up revering him.
No way.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So I was like, if that's your only request, you got it, dude.
Eric Collins is one of the best play-by-play guys out there. Charlotte Hornets, national voice, and he is getting the accolades that he deserves in his career. That'll be fun.
He had a new one at the end of the year I was watching. I forget what game it was, but one of the Hornets at a three, he just went, potato salad!
I'm in.
Well, you're not, according to our conversation
well,
off air last
I'm
week.
Well, look, I'm not in on potato salad.
You're anti-potato salad.
I love yelling random food items at big sporting moments.
Someone said...
Where's the... It's the Scott Zolak, Tom Brady. Where's the beef, Joe Pony?
Yeah.
Just yell random words. I'm all for it as a broadcaster.
I'm not mad at it, but Hornets fans were like, is there something about potato salad we're missing?
No, I just think he likes it, and why not yell it? Biscuits and gravy!
Yeah, Swag, Dirk gave the hot take last week. He's anti-potato salad.
I am anti-potato salad.
He loves
salad.
Egg salad,
I
hates love... potato salad.
Yeah, it's very
now,
weird.
See,
it
I hate
any
potato
sense.
Salad because I hate mayonnaise.
Yes,
so I hate all egg salad, chicken salad,
I don't like the composition
macaroni
of it.
Salad.
And then that led to it becoming your salmon take, where now people are trying to offer to make me potato salad.
I knew it would.
And bring it in. Now, I'm not so anti-potato salad that I won't take a bite of it. Like, it's not like, oh, gross, I can't eat any of it. I don't get excited to eat potato salad.
There
if it's like the only thing that I could eat, I could stomach myself through a bowl of potato salad.
Sure.
So if somebody brings it in, I'll have a couple of bites of it, but I'm not seeking out potato salad.
Look, there's bad potato salad.
There's definitely bad potato salad.
But elite potato salad?
Maybe I've just never had elite potato salad. Maybe that's my problem.
Yeah, I go more, when it has like a more of a dill flavor, there's more pickle involved, dill flavoring.
I love the pickle.
Yeah. I'm in.
Who doesn't love the pickle?
I know.
Give me a dill.
You can't overdo it with potatoes.
No.
Like, when there is such a thing as potato salad with too many potatoes.
Yes, it becomes just a potato bowl.
Now it's a cold, dry potato.
That's too much going on.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I don't need that right there.
But we'll get into the Blazers today, and we will talk about the Masters, which is where we will start the radio program.
Good morning, Joe Fisher.
I think officially you cannot text ever again about Rory McIlroy.
He's not allowed to utter the name Rory McIlroy in my presence for the entirety of my career here.
The rest of your life.
Yeah, until I croak, or he croaks, whoever goes first, I don't want any conversations, Joe Fisher.
You seen the way Joe eats?
Yeah.
It's probably going to be Joe.
Have you seen me? It might be me.
You're a fake fat.
I'm not.
Look at you. You're getting slimmer, too.
Because I'm wearing all
tell.
Black today. Yeah, that's why I purposely wore this shirt to look skinny today.
Well, let's start. Rory repeats at Augusta. We'll get into the Masters or the Blazers coming up at 7. We'll start with the Masters and Rory McIlroy repeating. Dirt and Sprague, let's get it going. 105.1, the Fan. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague with you this morning. Hope your weekend was good. Have you noticed a thing on Twitter that, like, you look at a tweet, you literally look at it, and it just disappears off your timeline?
Oh, I haven't noticed that.
That's a new thing that I've observed the last 2 weeks.
It's a new fun feature that you enjoy.
So I saw this, and I wanted to read it just outright. So
yeah.
I'll basically give you the gist of it. 1975, Jack Nicklaus lost a 5-shot lead after leading through 36.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, shot a 73.
Yeah.
And then he won by one stroke at 12 under. Yesterday, Rory McIlroy literally did the exact same thing and became the fourth player ever to win back-to-back Masters championships.
It was a remarkable Sunday in another year where the Masters delivers, because I think what drives the conversation and the narrative around the sport more so than anything is the legacy talk and the greatness talk. And when you get players who are near the top of their generation and the top of the history of the sport winning major championships, it's great for the game of golf. And golf is in a really good spot right now. In the last 5 majors, Scotty and Rory have won 4 of the 5. Rory won 1 last year, Scotty won 2, and then Rory gets the first one this year. And so you're in this era now where it feels like those two are going to go back and forth. And it just is remarkable to think about how much the dialogue and the conversation has changed in a calendar year. To where if I take you 13 months ago and ask, what are we saying about Rory and what is the conversation around him? It's a great player with the what ifs of he hasn't won a major in 10 years and what does that mean for him? It took him 10 years to win his 5th. It took him 1 year to win his 6th. And I think it's massive on 2 different fronts. One, the idea of being able to have the conversation again like we did 10 years ago of where does it go from here and what is his mountaintop? Like, how high can he actually climb? Because he's still in the prime of his career for another 9 or 10 years, and he's going to likely rattle off a handful more. So it's great to be able to have that conversation again. And then I think on the other side of it, you're also talking about a player who yesterday, and you maybe could have made this argument a year ago, but yesterday I think he passed a player like Phil Mickelson in the all-time rankings of golf history. He tied him with 6 majors. Phil does not have a career Grand Slam. He never won a U.S. Open, so Rory edges him there. And I think you're talking about a guy who yesterday became the greatest European player in the history of golf, which is remarkable to think about because there's been some great players. Not as impactful as Seve in terms of the, you know, the growth and the influence of the game.
Yeah, but that's timing that neither player
exactly.
controls.
The
right?
only other European player with 6 is Nick Faldo. And Nick Faldo, the only thing he could hang over Rory's head was, I won back-to-back Masters. Well, now
not
Rory's
anymore.
Done that, and Rory's got the career Grand Slam, and Faldo never did. And so, when it, like, golfers are very similar to NBA stars and NFL quarterbacks, that legacy and championships and majors are what matter and what we care about most. You can win as many PGA Tour events or regular season games or MVPs as you want. What do we count when we talk about the greatest NBA players or the greatest quarterbacks? We count Super Bowl rings and NBA championships, and golfers are no different. And so when you get a Rory winning back-to-back, it was an incredible weekend. He had to hold on for dear life. It was a thrilling Saturday and Sunday. You can't ask for anything more than that out of a Masters tournament.
Yeah, so he's the fourth player ever to win back-to-back Masters.
Yep.
I would also add to this, since 1986, I was born in the year 1986.
Yes,
I'm
going
to be 40 this year.
That was a long time ago. It's the 40th anniversary of Jack's win in 1986.
He is tied for the 2nd most major championships of all golfers.
Yeah. It's pretty good. It's a pretty good career right there.
I hadn't really considered your take on passing Phil, which I think when you take in the Grand Slam equation is 100% right.
Yeah, they're both at 6 major championships now. The only guys post-World War II, like that's I am one of those in golf that uses a little bit of a line of like, you know,
Bobby Jones, Ben Hogan, those
hey,
guys.
Hey, Harry Vardon in 1896 and 1914, that's great that you won 6 Open championships, but, you know, the only guys since World War II who have more major titles.
I've never heard that name in my entire life until you just said it right
they
there.
They have a trophy named after him in golf.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
The only guys with more since World War II are Arnold Palmer, Sam Snead, Tom Watson, Gary Player, Ben Hogan, Tiger Woods, and Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah.
So since World War II, there are only seven guys with more major championships than Rory McIlroy. And the exciting part is he's officially not done because he proved that a calendar year after winning his last major championship.
Yeah, I think because he did the same thing this year he did last year.
That's the beauty of Rory.
He said as much in the post-round. He's like, I never make it easy on myself.
No. Scotty's a robot. When Scotty has a three-shot lead, you might as well turn the tournament off. He's going to go fairway green two-putt, fairway green two-putt the entire way, and he'll choke you out. Rory's going to do something real dumb.
Well, think about all the golfers on the tour, really. Like, how many golfers don't do that?
Yeah.
I think Scotty might be an exception to this rule.
He might be the outlier robot, for
so
sure.
So what he did on 18, he hits into the trees on the far right. He's almost in the fairway of, what, 10?
10. Yeah. All he needs is a bogey to win.
Exactly. But, like, if you look at the angle of the shot, you're like, there's this big-ass tree, and there's a tree to his left.
Doesn't matter. I'm just going to turn that one over and hook it.
Let me just hit it at a breeze.
A mile high.
Just 155 yards or whatever it was.
Get it into the bunker.
Put it up there in the front bunker, and we're fine.
The ball won't even be sitting perfectly, but don't worry. I'll smoothly
it got down. There was a little groove, a little divot behind. He had to take some sand.
Which is what's funny is, like, Bryson also hit into that same bunker. So Bryson missed the cut because of what happened on 18 on the second round.
He collapsed on 18.
Which was hilarious. Like, I like having Bryson in the fold.
Yeah, it's great.
But also, when he blows it or chokes, I also find that funny and amusing.
He's, like, crying and yelling about why his ball's going to the left.
So he can only bogey at worst. If he doubles, he's not making the cut. And he gets into the bunker, and he hits it. He doesn't hit it well enough. It hits the top of the bunker and comes right back down.
Happened to him twice on Thursday. We had one on Thursday and then that one on Friday. That's what ended his weekend.
And then he hits again out of the bunker, and it rolls down the famous 18 green right off the green. And he basically has to hit the chip shot to stay and make the cut. And, of course, he doesn't make the chip shot, and he ends up missing the cut on 18.
Well done, Bryce.
And replaying that in my head.
A guy hasn't gotten out of this bunker before.
Yeah.
And you could do that and leave it in the bunker.
Well, and he did last year, right? He had the lead. Then he blew it again. Then he had a couple iconic shots. And you're like, oh, my God, he's going to do this. And then it goes to a playoff. And you're like, oh, my God, is he going to lose this?
He gained the lead and blew the lead multiple times. Master Sunday. Yeah.
And so I just thought, oh, he really might double bogey. Like, from where his ball is sitting here, you tell me it takes five shots to do it. That might be what happens.
I wouldn't have been mad about it because it would have given us a McIlroy-Scheffler playoff, which would have been incredible.
It would have been unbelievable.
You would have taken Scotty, I think, in that instance.
At that point, you would have had to.
He was golfing so well.
Yeah, or he did the same thing last year and then birdied the playoff hole and won the tournament.
Yeah, the only question would have been how long Scotty had been sitting around because he was a few groups ahead of everybody else.
I assume he went to the range as soon as
he was done. No, I know, but you've been farting around having a snack and a
you can be cold in that moment. I think they said he was watching in the scorer's table or in the scorer's booth or whatever where they signed their
did you think when he nutted it on 12
love the phrasing.
I don't
love,
think you can use that on the
I don't know why you can't.
It's time to nut up or shut up.
That's what he did, and he nutted up.
Explain what that term means, or
you know what it means.
You just hit it pure.
Take your hand and put it down your pants, son.
Usually the end result of hitting it pure, you're right.
That was such a great shot. And a hole that
which hole? Which
is
one?
12. It's 12. It's
the par 3.
Shot on 12.
Amen corner, and he knocked it within, I don't know, 5 feet or whatever he did.
He did a lot of putting off of the second cut there. He didn't really want to chip from too close. He wanted to putt everything, which I don't blame him. Look at the end result.
I mean, it was the remarkable thing about his win this year is that when you think about Rory and his strengths as a golfer, in the modern time it is
he couldn't hit the driver for 3 days.
It's his ability to bomb drives past everybody. Yeah. And he did it occasionally.
Straightened it out on Sunday.
Right. 13 was a big one. I mean, he had some big ones throughout the round yesterday. But his ranks in terms of hitting fairways and driving accuracy was nearly dead last in the tournament the entire week. And he was a 6-shot lead going into the weekend. And that, I think, shows his evolution as a player that he didn't even play that good at golf. He just scrambled his way to a 12 under par going into Saturday and then held on for dear life, similar to Jack all those years ago in the 70s.
So he is... Just so we're clear on this and we all agree, he's the second best golfer since Tiger.
Yeah, in my mind he is. It's not even a debate anymore.
Yeah.
For now.
In his generation, he's the greatest.
In terms of legacy and accomplishments,
like in this century,
yeah.
In the last, in our lifetimes,
yes.
Yeah, it's not a debate.
Yeah, I don't think it is either.
Scheffler's the only one that's...
Scheffler's the one that can pass it.
He could for sure get there. No doubt. He's at four. He can win the U.S. Open and also finish the career Grand Slam this year.
There have been guys that have had years. You know, Spieth in 2015 was...
Brooksy is random at five, though.
Brooksy passed him at five when he won a couple of years ago, and he jumped past Rory. And I remember being that a big conversation of like, damn, Rory was at four, then he didn't win one forever. And now here comes Rory with back-to-back.
Brooksy, I think, playing a year on the PGA Tour, having regular competition.
He had a good week.
For him to start to gain some consistency, and maybe later on this year he'll be a little bit more formidable.
Yeah. Somebody sent me a photo, and it was of Colin Morikawa, who actually had a really good final round.
Ballsy round by him yesterday.
His back
he couldn't move.
Acting up.
I was laying on my couch in pain watching him walk around every time they showed him. He had like five birdies in a row on the back nine.
He got on fire, and he put himself in contention there. And somebody sent me a photo, and the image was of him walking off a green. I don't know if you saw Colin Morikawa, and it's like, oh, I'm going to wear the shirt that I definitely don't think I'll be photographed in, because that's one of the ugliest shirts I've ever seen in my life.
That was pretty hideous.
I don't know what Adidas was doing with that thing.
I'm pro Adidas golf, and that was
not
a good look.
That was terrible.
We're trying to sell this thing, and I ain't buying it, buddy.
Ain't buying that one.
I'm not buying that one.
So Rory McIlroy repeats. We'll hear from Rory, and we got some more to discuss from the fallout of the Masters. We're getting the Blazers coming up at the top of the hour. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on 105.1 The Fan. Well, something you alluded to that I noticed throughout the weekend at Augusta, and we need to talk about this, was CBS's inability to ever locate balls that were being hit out of tough spots. Like, this wasn't just a 118th hole Rory McIlroy shot.
Well, it also hurts when it's the 72nd hole of the tournament, and a guy's hitting out of trees who's known for doing funky things when he's trying to win a tournament, and everybody's like, where did that ball go? No idea.
This happened a lot. Like, I would watch run-of-the-mill guy, not in contention, hit a ball, and the camera would just pan to the fairway. You wouldn't even see anything.
Yeah.
And the camera guy would just be look. I don't know if that's different this year than in years past, but to me as a sports fan watching, it felt like they lost the ball more this year.
A little bit.
And so I thought that was kind of a negative takeaway from the event of, like, not being able to show me where Rory's second shot out of the pine straw behind trees went.
Right. On the last hole.
I didn't know it was in sand until, like, 2 minutes after he hit it.
No, because they just had a general camera on the green. You couldn't see the ball come in. It lands and kind of plops into the sand, so it wasn't like it bounced and rolled into it. And so you just couldn't see it on the fly. They had no clue. Even when he walked up to his ball, they were like, I think that's his.
Yeah, they had to joke about how it's Rory's
ball.
Cam Young.
It says Roar's on it. It's like, how? This is the last hole the tournament guys figured out. The worst one, it was a theme of the entire weekend. The worst one was on Friday. They missed his chip-in live on ESPN.
I don't know if you noticed that.
Because they're showing a random Victor Hovland tee shot on 16 when Rory is on 17 on this incredible run, and you hear the crowd go crazy. And at that time, Scott Van Pelt then jumps on. He's like, let's take a look at our leaderboard, because you could tell they were trying to get the shot ready. And then right when he hits the chip, you can always tell when the announcer's like, that's on a good line, because he's setting it up to go in. And that's how they handled it. There were a handful of those mistakes throughout the weekend. ESPN, I thought, had a pretty rough broadcast. CBS was decent for the most part. And then I'm with you, there were a few moments here or there where they lost guys, or just kind of the camera didn't cut off soon enough. And then to not see the approach shots from either player on the last hole of the tournament is just inexcusable.
I think one of the biggest takeaways, aside from Rory repeating and doing it back-to-back, I think one of the biggest takeaways from the entire event is how terrible ESPN was.
It was really bad. It was really bad.
Super upset.
Yeah, it's not just the Kevin Hart, Jason Kelce stuff.
No,
like,
but that
whatever,
was the start point. That was the launch point of, like, this is not the Masters. You are turning this into a circus.
They aired a Wright Thompson piece at one point coming out of, I mean, I watched every second of it. It was a Wright Thompson does those great voiceover pieces, and like 45 seconds into it, it just stopped playing. And then two commercial breaks later, they went back and replayed the same thing, and that time had the full book of it. It just, the way they handled it was clunky.
Yeah,
they missed a lot of shots. They didn't show a lot of moments. There were a few times on Thursday or Friday where I'm sitting there saying, like, Brooks Koepka's two under par. He's on the 13th hole. I don't feel like I've seen a Brooks Koepka shot at all. And then they'd show him, and he's like, wait, he's already on 13?
Right.
And if you're not watching on the Masters app and following every player, you're just missing huge chunks of the tournament. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
The funny thing is, like, I understand that when you get to the very end of the round, the guys have kind of sorted themselves out, and we know who's in contention to truly win the event.
Sure.
The funny thing was, every time I saw Justin Rose, I just saw Jason Day standing, and I'm like,
they didn't show a single shot
Jason
of Jason
Day. Must have sucked. Actually, he didn't.
No.
He had a nice Masters for himself. They didn't show anything Jason Day did.
Yeah, he had a rough final day, but the still, he's in the second to last or third, whatever, you know, group he was in, third to last. I can't remember exactly which
Rose.
One. He was with Rose at the end of the tournament. They didn't show a shot of his all day. The other highlight of the day yesterday, and I don't know if you guys noticed it, I went back and watched. So the Masters app, you can open it up and watch literally any shot, which is a great feature.
They replayed the entire round on CBS Sports Network.
Which is delightful. Yeah. When they had Scottie Scheffler, I think, wanted to murder Ha-Tong Lee on the 13th hole. I don't know if you caught his travails on that hole.
Is that the one he got a 10 on?
So he got a 10, and they were like, Scotty's been waiting for a long time. They didn't show any of it on the broadcast. And
no,
I'm like,
I didn't see any of it.
I need to go watch this. I'm not kidding. Go spend the 90 seconds watching his 13th hole from yesterday. He hooks one up into the bushes above the green in a place that I've never seen anybody hit from. And all you could see is his head behind a big-ass bush. And he hits, and there's nothing that comes out, and the crowd, like, groans. He hits again. The ball comes out onto the green. You're like, eh, the crowd kind of reacts. He gets up to his ball on the backside of the green and then puts it into the creek and has to go back around and chip back up onto the green.
Over the water.
Oh, back over the little creek. In front, it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And you could tell Scotty, who ended up missing a birdie putt on the hole, was just standing there like, I'm gonna wring your neck, dude. Yeah. I am miserable right now.
Well, Lee shot an 80, so his name popped up on Saturday. I'm like, who is Lee?
Ha-Tong Lee.
Ha-Tong Lee.
He was in the final group with Scotty last year at the Open Championship. Random, I know. But
I believe you.
He was there.
But I started watching him because his name popped up. Dude, big hothead. That Ha-Tong Lee gets super
spicy.
Pissed, dude.
Very spicy with
he
a bad shot.
He thinned one so badly.
Oh, on 15?
Yeah.
Into the water.
But it didn't go straight into the water. It, like,
it
rolled
skipped.
Into the water. One of the broadcaster, I'm forgetting who it was, he was like, I've never seen anybody do that before.
Like, that looked like one of mine, man. He didn't even get the ball off the ground.
The unfortunate nature, too, Dirt, is that, so Rory wins it. Scotty pushes really tough.
Yeah.
The other part of the conversation that we have to have, ESPN, you're pretty terrible. Ha-Tong Lee, boy, you shot an 80. Enough said.
All of it came on the back nine, too.
Justin Rose.
Yeah, that was tough. That was tough. I found myself pulling for him.
The par putt on 17, you're like, oh, this is turning into something.
Yeah. Well, and he chunked a chip on 12.
Yeah,
like
he did.
He had the tournament by the balls, if you will.
He did. He had the lead.
He took the lead going into the back nine. He birdied the ninth hole, and it felt like all the momentum was on his side of like, man, he's actually.
Yeah, he had a two-shot lead
at the
turn. Two-shot
lead going into the turn.
I didn't feel that. What you're saying, like, no, I never felt like
you never
oh,
do
he's
it
do
at
it.
Augusta.
I was like, oh, Rosie, look at Rosie here.
It's just that he had put himself back in a spot to like.
Then
he
Rory hit that little hook iron from the fairway at 8.
Yes, and put he gave himself
and
an eagle.
Got
putt.
Himself a birdie there, and you're like, okay, here he goes.
Momentum came, and that was his second straight birdie. And then Rose, he lost it on 11. He hit a bad second shot on 11. It led to a bogey, and then on 12 he went long and he chunked a chip, and you could just tell the wheels kind of came off. And you feel horrible for him because unlike Rory in previous times when he couldn't get it done. And we would ask the question, would he ever? He's still young. He's still, I mean, how old is Rory? 35, 36?
I think he's 37 or 38.
Okay, 37.
Now.
So maybe he's a little bit older than I'm giving credit for. Rosie's in the back end of that now.
So
we've seen guys, you know, Tiger won when he was 43. Jack won famously when he was 45. So guys have done it. It just, you never know. When you're in your mid to upper 40s, you never know how many cracks at it you're legitimately going to get.
Yeah.
And so that I was, you felt terrible for him yesterday because I think a lot of people were pulling for him to get it done.
Well, he had that par 5 and he reached it. It was like 215 away.
Three putted, 13.
And he blew it right past and then he missed the birdie putt.
It all unraveled, 11, 12, 13. And then he lost his marbles a little bit. He had a bad tee shot, got a great break on 17. It kicked out of the trees into the fairway.
Dude,
he
got
a
great
kick
on that.
And then he didn't take advantage of it. And that was the whole, he missed the short par putt. So another year of being close. He's a great guy to take in your Masters pools because he always is relevant there. I think, was it the fifth or sixth top three or top five? Like, he is always near the top of the leaderboard.
Mm-hmm.
He just is one of those guys to this point has not been able to get it done.
It was a really fun thing that I looked at the leaderboard and I said, all of these guys could win and I'd be cool with it. Russell Henley.
Russell Henley was the only one.
Cam Young, to me, doesn't do much. I know he's a young up-and-comer and he's been great, obviously.
Just won the Players, coming off the Ryder Cup. Like, I'm with you. He's not a huge name yet.
He's got angry, I yell at you energy, like, from a dad perspective.
He looks like a mute. You just never hear him talk. He doesn't say anything. Even they interviewed him after his round on Saturday, and he's not the worst, but it just,
he looks like he judges you if you don't go to church.
Oh, really? Sunday morning?
Yeah.
You're out washing your car, huh?
He looks like by the fourth beer, he tells you how much harder his life was. He just has that look. I don't know. I don't explain it.
I think it's the beard.
It's definitely the beard.
When you have the beard.
When they showed him as a child at the Masters in 07, I was like, look at that cute little kid.
Who's that cute little kid?
And I know everybody in America has a beard, and you're never going to shave your beard now if you have a beard for whatever reason. But he is somebody that, like, with that beard, man, and that
hair. It's a good-looking beard, though. I'll give him that.
It's great hair,
and
too.
And the great head of hair.
But his
super
face
jealous.
With it?
Yeah.
He just looks like he takes dodgeball way too seriously.
He absolutely does. There's no facial emotions that he ever shows other than like a permanent frown.
He always looks mad.
He always looks upset.
He hit a putt and it was, you know, pretty distanced putt.
Yeah.
And it's like the percentage probably was like 10. And he put it within 2 inches and he just stares at his caddy and he's like, starts pointing like,
right
there. Why didn't it break?
Why didn't it move?
Dude, just get out with a par. You were too far away.
The only reason I was slightly anti him yesterday was he kept talking about break some trees. He had two on Thursday where it just kicked off of a tree. One should have been out of bounds on 13, right to the middle of the fairway.
Yeah.
He had another one early in the round on 3 where he did the same thing. And you're like, dude, how many times is this guy going to get away with this? And then on 9, he hit it and he's like hitting out of a bush. So it's like, all right, now we're even. The luck, I didn't want somebody to win because they just kept getting kicks out of the trees. The only other bummer for me from the day was that you didn't get one or two other guys. Scotty was great with a 68. Hatton pushed up to 10 under. Henley came out of nowhere and got red hot.
They're lucky Henley didn't win. He missed like 4 birdies that he could have
hit. A lot of great chances. But then you had like Burns, who got off to a really sluggish start and then fought his way back a little bit. Lowry was terrible. Dude. Jason Day was 3 over. So you had this other group of guys. Like the rest of that leaderboard looked really solid. There could have been one or two other guys if they would have shot up. 68 would have made things a lot more interesting.
Sure.
But, dude, coming down to the last hole, and I know he still needed a bogey to win. That's all you can ask. With big names atop the leaderboard, like that's a dream master scenario.
We've got the NBA playoffs all set, squared away. We got the play-in matchups. Our beloved Blazers are in the play-in. They secured the 8th seed yesterday with a win over the Kings. We'll dive into the Blazers coming up at the top of the hour. Coming up next, let's hear from two-time, back-to-back, Masters champ Rory McIlroy on 105.1 The Fan. Well, Blazers are already talking trash to Spurs fans. So we got that going in our lives. At the play-in tomorrow, but the Blazers secure the 8th seed yesterday, so we'll dive into that. We also have all the playoff matchups.
Yes, we do.
So we'll dive into some of what's going on in the association coming up here at the top of the hour. So Rory McIlroy wins his back-to-back, his second major championship. And here is what he thought in the post-round on winning back-to-back Masters.
I thought it was so difficult to win last year because of trying to win the Masters and the Grand Slam. And then this year I realized it's just really difficult to win the Masters. I tried to convince myself it was both, but just incredible. You know, I obviously did the bulk of my work on Thursday and Friday. I don't think I would have believed anyone if they said to me, you know, all you have to do is shoot even par for the weekend and you'll win.
You know, it's not that going into the tournament dirt that you say, oh, Sprague, Rory is a favorite. How do you feel about it? Well, I wouldn't have said impossible. I also don't think I didn't bet him.
Yeah.
I really it wasn't that I expected to have a bad Masters. I didn't agree with what Patrick said of like him missing the cut.
I mean, it's been 24 years since we've seen somebody win back to back. It doesn't happen very often.
Dude, in my lifetime, there's been 2 golfers, right?
Because
Jack did it.
Faldo was 89, 90, and Tiger was
And I was too young for Faldo.
Right.
That's something you learn about. And then Tiger was like right in my sweet spot. So like I've largely watched one guy do it. And so it's not that I'm like stunned he did it. It's more just like, man, he really did put it together. And he put it together so well at the beginning of the first 2 rounds.
Yep, that's where it was won.
That Saturday let a lot of guys back. And then even Sunday, he got down early to Cam Young. Cam Young had a 2-stroke lead. And you're like, oh, dude, is Cam Young ready to do this? And here we go.
It was like the 3rd hole, I think he double bogeyed. He 3-putted from like 5 feet for a double bogey. And you're like, or 4th hole, I think it was, the downhill par 3. And it just, oh, my God, it's happening again. And then he was able to rebound from there. Eerily similar to last year, where if you look back last year, it was all the back 9 on Friday and the front 9 on Saturday. He was like 10 under in that 18-hole stretch.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the 54 holes, he was like 1 under par. And it was the same this year where it all came mainly, I mean, a hot Thursday and then that great back 9 Saturday where he shot, 30 or 31 on the back 9 on Friday. That's where the majority of his scoring came from. And then it was just hold on for dear life the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, here he is as well on the biggest lessons he's learned from Augusta over the years.
Just keep going. You know, even, you know, I find myself in a very similar position today to where I was in the last round last year, you know, two or three behind. But I played solid golf after that. You know, I was four under for a 11 hole stretch there, which, you know, is what I needed to do to give myself that cushion going up the last. And, you know, I just tried really hard to focus on myself. I thought if I could get to 14 under, I thought that everyone else would struggle to get to that score. So that was the number I had in my head. I got to 13 on the last and, you know, had that two shot cushion. So didn't quite get there, but, yeah, just keep going. Just keep, you know, keep your head down and keep going. And, you know, if you put the R's in and you work on the right things, you know, eventually it'll come good for you.
And so he gets his second straight Masters with all the other majors still to come for the year. So we'll see what Rory McIlroy is going to do. But he wins his sixth major championship since 1986. That's the second most. He's tied for the second most, as Tiger obviously leads the crowd in that one with 15. But he's tied with Phil. And to your point earlier, past Phil, you may argue he passed Phil last year with the Grand Slam part of that.
Yeah, one major shy of him, but the Grand Slam component Phil never got.
He tied it. If you wanted to care about total titles, yep. he tied his number at six, and now he has the Grand Slam. So back-to-back, one of four golfers to do it. And Rory etches his name even more in the history books.
The interesting part about him, too, is that would have been, and he acknowledged it after the round, if he doesn't finish that off yesterday, based on the way he played Thursday and Friday, that is such a heartbreaking loss.
Yeah.
Because he had a six-shot lead going into the weekend. And he's a guy, and you could say this a lot about elite players because they're near the top of the leaderboard a lot. There's heartbreaking losses there. He's 2 3-foot putts at Pinehurst 2 years ago away from winning a U.S. Open. Think back to the Open Championship at St. Andrews where he's in the final group and he can't make a putt. Yep. And Cam Smith gets hot and chases him down and ends up winning the tournament. So he's a guy who certainly knows his share of heartbreaks over the years. That would have been another one. I think the difference this year from last year was such a big deal to get the monkey off of his back that he acknowledged in the aftermath of winning yesterday that he kind of lost his driving force. He lost his motivation. That was his motivation forever. He won it, and he was like, all right, what now? And the rest of his season wasn't very good. And I don't think that's going to be the case this year. He seems like a guy who was reset and now is chasing after a number that maybe 10 years ago he thought he could get. And so I don't think you're going to see the same lull post-Masters win that you saw last year this year.
The Blazers are in the play-in. We got the matchup. We got the time. Are we already looking ahead into a playoff matchup? Loaded second hour. We'll start there. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1, The Fan.